Welcome to the Start Well podcast. I'm Dawn Thomas, your host. As a mother, financial advisor, and researcher, I know the importance of empowering young people on their financial journeys. Whether you're a parent, grandparent, or the coolest aunt or uncle, join me in exploring how impactful conversations about money can shape a young person's future. Let's harness their superpower of time and your superpower of influence to ensure they start well and continue to live well into the future. The information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your personal and financial objectives and situation. Before acting on any information discussed here, you should consider its appropriateness, having regard to your objectives, needs, and financial position. Welcome to today's Start Well episode. We are so lucky to have Glenn James with us. I imagine applause coming in right now, Glenn, but we don't have the budget for that. Before Glenn just says hello, I'm going to read a few things he's written in his book about what he's not. Okay. I'm not a writer and I hate reading. I'm not an economist and I hate maths. I'm not a behavioral therapist and I hate getting told what to do. I'm not a naturally frugal person and I hate budgets. But yet, Glenn, you are so influential when it comes to getting people to understand the important bits about money.
Yeah. So thanks for having me. I think what in the book in particular, I wanted just to say that I'm nothing special, but I've worked out how to manage my money well, invest my money well, and to kind of automate my money, keep out of debt, and almost hack the system without being the most intelligent person on the planet. So I'm not a lot of things. And yeah, I don't think anyone's better than anyone at anything. Sure, just because you write a book doesn't mean you've got all the answers. I've got some answers. And it's more, this is what I've learned after meeting with hundreds of people face-to-face and having thousands of people complete the Glenn James spending plan and receiving feedback. So a lot of the stuff that I write in the book, it's based on my own personal experience of being a spender with money. It's based on, yeah, face-to-face when I was a financial advisor, and then obviously the podcast and all our listener feedback.
Yeah, you've got a whole community, Glenn. I mean, there's a book and there are the podcasts. So I think with our listeners today, there's a lot of work that goes behind your podcast, especially the episode that I am going to talk about, which is the 6 ways to invest for kids. You know, that's episode 631B. And then there's a follow-up FAQ episode, which is 631C. So for everyone that's listening, this is actually going to be your start into the This Is Money world, even if you're not part of it right now. But I would encourage you that listen to the episode that is that we've recommended, where our conversations are going to be based around. The book, I got it out of the library, Glenn. So sort your money out and invest. I can tell you it's very well loved. Like there's sticky tape through the pages. It's passed through many hands in the Kalamunda and Lismurdy area in WA.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's very well used. But I would say, again, reading your book was really entertaining, Glenn. Like I felt entertained and learning at the same time.
And that's what I want to do every time I pick up a microphone. I want to entertain because I think podcasting, most of it is I'm doing this to pass the time and be entertained and learn. So I think you can try and have a bit of fun along the way and make some entertainment.
Yeah. And, you know, before This Is Money was a rebrand from My Millennial Money. And in part of the start of your book, you said that you're writing in the language that millennials get. But what you said with This Is Money is that really the content is available for anyone of every age. I can see in this book, Glenn, that my 13-year-old, you know, who enjoyed doing a spending plan, which we'll get to later, he would enjoy reading this book, and my daughter, who's 12, would enjoy reading this book as well. So I don't know if that was your intended audience when you wrote it.
I wonder if they got some of the adult jokes in there.
Well, If they need to, they can come and talk to me about that, and then we'll have a
Yeah.
moment.
Yeah, kids. If you don't know what this means, ask your mum.
Yeah, that's right. I know. What was it? On insurance? So you're trying to get people to pay attention in that chapter.
Yes.
I was like, how would I feel about this topic term? I'm like, I understand it's not for children, but we'll get past that.
Yeah.
So yeah, so parents, grandparents, the cool uncle and aunts, if you're reading this, sorry, listening to this and you read that book, yes, there's some language in there that you might want to vet, but overall I think it's a really entertaining book. So Glenn, I want to jump into this episode first because honestly, when I was listening to it, you know, I'm a financial advisor and I've got kids, so I'm listening to it on two lines, was that you've done a lot of work into uncovering six different ways that kids can invest. And the six ways are you're looking at investing in your own name, you've got your informal trust, you've got investment bond or education bonds, superannuation, formal trust, and investing in experiences. Okay. Like why I think this episode is award-winning is like I know how much of work would have gone into it. And you said that
Oh, it was a pain in the ass to prepare.
yeah, because you really vetted it. So I feel like it's a work of art. People just have to listen to it to understand how much of thought kind of went behind the episode. And you said for that episode as well, you made it clear that no one's actually sponsoring it. You just wanted to make it clear in that particular episode, it's for the children. You wanted to focus on the children.
Just got to look after the kiddies. That's all we're doing.
You're
Did
very
like if I can interview you for a moment, like what have you resolved with how you're investing for your kids?
Oh,
Like are
look.
you doing a blend of these or have you like, nah, stuff is we're spending it all. You can work for your own
No.
money.
I like the conversation that you built, right? Because you put
Yeah.
number six was investing in experiences.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the things when that we were choosing where to live. We were like, okay, do we get a smaller place where it's near a really good school, you know, where it'd be cheaper, or do we try and go to a private school? And you know, like when you're trying to think about cash flow between where you have, and we went, you know what, I think the kids will be fine at school, in public school, if we spend a bit more on the house, you know, but that's a personal household decision because we thought the experiences part of it would be important. And not that we're placing less value on education, just as someone coming from Singapore, I think education was too much of a focus. I like the fact in Australia, kids get to be kids, you know? Yeah. So I like number six, which was investing in experiences. And you said in your podcast that that made you think about the fact that you were putting money into bonds for your niece and nephew. And now you stop. You're just letting it compound, but you want to focus on experiences. So Glenn, since you're on my podcast, I'm going to ask you your experience around that journey. How are they enjoying that change in strategy of yours?
Well, it's only quite new. So I think the two nephews, they're twins, they don't even know yet that there's money. They don't know the extent of it. I've told them that, hey, you know how Uncle Glenn doesn't buy you Christmas and birthday presents because he's a tight-ass Grinch. It's because I'm actually putting a small amount of money aside in a bank account for you. And I'll give it to you one day if you're a good. If you're good boys, like if you end up in jail and on drugs and all that stuff, well, hey, I'm keeping my money. But if you're good, this money can be yours. And then with Grace, who's 14, I did show her the actual amount and showed her, you know, that this is what's happening and whatnot. And I actually showed her that when we were on holidays in Bali. Over breakfast one morning, I just had my laptop. Because that's when I was actually preparing this episode that I did. I was in Bali next to the pool, you know, typing it up. That's my idea of a holiday. And I kind of resolved like most kids, most of the time in Australia, they're going to be okay. So these kids, they get everything. They're spoiled. So I'm like, nah, you don't need any more money. Not doing it. I'll keep what's in the accounts, but I'm not contributing monthly anymore. So I'm just resolved that, yep, I'll go up, spend time with you. You know, we're talking about another holiday at the moment with them, maybe a cruise or America, do the Disneyland thing, but yeah, I've just like turned that off because it's getting ridiculous that money's not going to be their problem. And if you, I don't know, teach your kids how to manage money and it'll be all good.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I'm not a
No,
parent.
it's a, yeah, just so it was good. I think I like the fact that with that episode, you went through things in a very comprehensive manner, but it was also a well-rounded way of what's the purpose of the investment, right? So being a financial advisor, our clients do invest in things like your education bonds, investment bonds, because they're saving for the kids. But I feel like, in a sense, that doesn't really tick the box of the financial education for the child, which you've actually addressed in that episode, because there's investing to give them the support that you would want as a parent or grandparent in the future. But then, how do you embark the money lessons to that child when they're learning about investing? You know, so that's what I got out of the nuances of the different sections was that I had to go back because I'm did the informal trust option, which you said I've probably set up incorrectly because of the whole tax file number issue and the beneficial ownership, right? So I was like, oh, I was just like listening to every word you were saying about that, and I had to think about why did I go down that route, and I went down that route because I felt that I assumed the taxable position will be on my husband, who is the main account holder, and I thought, you know, he's putting more money into super, and that will negate any of the impacts of any sort of income coming through from that portfolio. But they're still really small. The primary purpose of that was to get the kids to understand the impact of saving money away for long term. Yeah, but I did understand that as that becomes bigger, then it may not be the most tax effective route to take. And yes, education bonds could make sense, but and I find them a bit too restrictive and not really helping me with the education of the investment bit. So do you sort of see my dilemma there, Glenn? Like, how
Yeah,
do
I
I tick off
mean,
those boxes?
well, it could be that, I don't know, I'll just pick a number. 2 grand per kid that you throw in the investment bond. Okay, so a lot of people's world, that could be superficial amounts of money. And then it might just be in the Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund. And then you just show the kids like the underlying assets in the Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund. So it's like, okay, so a portion of this, you've got shares in JB Hi-Fi, you've got this, and just use that superficial amounts as the educational thing, and that's their account, and they can log in, and if they want to contribute money, they can. But the more I kind of went down this rabbit hole, I'd resolved like healthy parents, healthy financial parents, healthy financial kids. Like if you're financially strong at the time, you can help your kids if you like and if they need it. And it's that logic of, I think, if you had two kids and one of them needed a pair of glasses for eyesight, you're not spending $600 on the other kid just because you bought one glasses. So what that could mean is if you had different aged kids, yep, you're 25 now, you want to buy your own house. We as parents, we've invested well. We're actually going to pay your lender's mortgage insurance for you. That could be 15, 20 grand at the time, get you in the house. And then 5 years later, when the other kid comes online at age 25 and he's keen to buy a house, they may have some good savings. They may be a good saver. And the parents are like, we're going to give you 10 grand towards the house. Like you're smashing it. Or we'll buy some furniture. So I think build wealth and be financially strong. And it's just cleaner, it's easier. But sure, have those superficial accounts for the training education. That could be an option. But the whole, like, it's so bloody complex and confusing, this informal trust thing. Like, I did the document, I had two tax professionals. One of them basically worked for Treasury, look at that document. And they were like, yep, everything you said there is accurate. And I was talking to someone the other day. It's a financial advisor experience and all that. Like, no, you can do informal trust on your own thing. And I'm like, I feel like I'm getting gaslit because I was categorically told that I was correct with own tax file number, blah, blah, blah. All that to say, you've got to get your own advice and hang your hat off your own
Yeah.
tax advice.
Because you say it's a murky area, you've made that clear on your page as well. And the page has all the links and a lot more information after that episode. I think I was focused on using that investment to educate kids. Like I said, it's a smaller amount, but I also know my husband's salary sacrifices. And so it was a bit of a blend of, we talk about superannuation as an option. We did talk about, would you invest money for kids in super? Look, I've always been open to that. Like I thought, if I ever won Lotto, Glenn, I would immediately stick money into super for them, because I'll be like, maybe no matter if they have just been really bad with their money all their life, there's still this backup money that they get when they're 60.
Well, I think it's important for your listeners when we talk about super, it's like two options. So the first option is get the child a tax file number, open the child a superannuation account, and seed that account with 5 grand or whatever you want, and then happy days. Or the other option, if you were 50 years old and you had a 15-year-old and you're like, yeah, I want to save money for 10 years for the kid, yeah, salary sacrifice. And then when you retire in 15 years or stop working in 10 years, just withdraw that money from super and give as a gift.
Yes, that was I really liked that, being articulated in even the case study, right? It's a case study. Client stories ahead. I don't know whether it was like Natalie who was sharing a story about being older adults, and it resonated, because I think in a way that's what I was doing in the back of my mind. I think that episode made me confront the finer points of my decision making towards getting to what I did. Because you know how sometimes you just do something, and then I had panic when I listened to the episode. So I went through panic first. Panic was the first emotion. Then I started going, no, actually, you've not forgotten a process. It's just that I haven't actually reflected on my process of how I got to that answer. That I know that that salary sacrifice into super for someone that is closer to the point of access is a way that we'll be able to do it. So certainly, superannuation, two ways you can use it. If you are a parent that is nearer to the age of access, that could be an option that it tees up quite nicely with the timing when they may need the funds. And that's discussed more in the episode. And then you did mention about if money goes into their own super fund. And I was amazed that there was someone that opened it up for, is it their grandchild, right? For like their baby. It sounded like really young. Yeah. And I thought
It's wild.
that's wild. That was wild. I thought, I didn't think, I knew it could happen, but I didn't know anyone that they were doing that. I think the thing about the first home owner's grant is just being aware of how much you can put in a year, each financial year, to be able to get that maximum in, but also being aware that the investment profile needs to also mesh up. Because I mean, with younger people, they say longer term time horizon, they could be in growth, high growth assets. But if they're needing the funds within 3 years for a home deposit, they might want to consider whether that is put into a separate option in the fund. So I think when we went through that, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff, it's incidental when if you are setting a super account up for a minor, like it's an issue 10 years down the track. And yeah, it's just, I don't know. I think it'd be a very limited circumstance where you might do that. You'd have to have spare money. You might do it if you've come into some money from like if you've been widowed or a spouse has died and there has been some life insurance. You might say, I'm going to put your mother or father's a small portion into superannuation, 20 grand per kid or something like that. And then if that partner does remarry in the future, that's protected in estate planning for the benefit of the kid, even though they can't touch it. But yeah, I just think having the conversation and thinking about doing it the right way. And, even if you wanted to open, a little Raise account in your name as the adult, and each child had its own little sub account. He just did it as a all on your name, just so they could see it. Like, remember, their kids, you can invest $1,000. They think it's the most amount of money in the world. Use that as the education.
Yeah,
And
see,
then
it.
when they, and then, you know, you almost kind of prime them. So when they start working, you can add your own money to this.
Yes, that's the bit that I wanted to say that was also highlighted in the podcast, is that they need to have some involvement with this, with growing the money, because the adults that we see that are doing it for their kids, like they're doing all the right stuff to prepare for their kids. But there's a little bit of the skin in the game kind of missing.
Yep.
And I think you kind of need that if you're saying, okay, if you have gone over and above because you're putting more in there, then you're going to actually have a better outcome in the future. And that's something you can be proud of, moving forward.
And I think it really depends on the child. And one way, like if you've got a kid who doesn't actually care, well, that's awesome. They might enjoy kicking a soccer ball than looking at an investment account. But what you could do in terms of that skin in the game, when they get their first job, you're like, all right, I want to really encourage you to save every single year. If you save up to $3,000, we'll match it with, you know, half of that $1,500. But it's got to stay in the account from the previous year or something like that. So you could do a match. Like if you, whatever you save, we'll match it up to
Yes.
a couple of grand. And
So I
that's
think
going to be
that's
the
it.
best return they'll get.
Yeah, so that I think that's the thing that you've highlighted, is that it's easy to get into it, but also there are other things that you just need to consider based on your own family and what the outcome is of that. Because there's purely just saving money for the kids to make sure that you can support them in the future. There's the education of the kids, but there's also the other stuff, like you said, investing in experiences. That's a whole other line as well, and how you do that. And the informal trust bit. So again, go to the podcast and there are further links. You'll understand what Glenn and I are talking about, but why it's a bit of a complicated scenario and what that means and why it can be, you know, you may have probably set it up incorrectly. You may not have understood. You know, you might have thought it's set up a particular way and it's not. But it's just about, yeah, maybe just talking it out a bit more about how you want to do this for the kids. I think listen to the episode and then sit down and discuss.
And also, it's okay to just open a bank account for the first couple of years while the kids are young, like under 10. Like, yeah, this is your bank account. We're adding money to it. Like, you can show them, doesn't have to be this is a complex ETF. It's like, this is your bank account. It's $500. You got $20 for your birthday from Nan. Let's put $10 into your savings account.
So that you
So,
see
yeah.
that, yeah, and you mentioned as well that I wasn't aware of about the TFN considerations, even with bank accounts and when banks can withhold tax. So see, that's why I said that episode, I was clinging on to every single word because I was like, oh, did not know everything. You know, I'm a financial advisor and I don't know any of this kid's stuff because it's not really a topic that comes up
No.
so much.
And it varies, I think, between banks. Like some, no, sorry, I correct that. It's different ages have different thresholds. And some banks make it easier to set up a kid's account and some don't.
Yes.
Like
So
it's
this is
just,
just,
yeah.
it was like mind blown information. I was like, I
Oh, it's
felt like,
crazy.
yeah, it was crazy. I just went, do I know anything really in life after I listened to that podcast? I just had to.
It's like my niece and nephews, like they've all got iPhones, they've got iPads, like they get what they want. I'm like, get stuff, you don't need money. Is ridiculous. It's just, they're not ever going to go without.
Well, that's a good point with these. Okay, they're not going to do without, right? And we're
Yeah.
talking about financial education. You said that's probably the best gift, that if you sort
I
yourself and you're
reckon.
healthy with that, you pass it on to the kids. There was something on the project's Instagram today about a mum who makes their she makes her kids pay rent at home to teach them about how to manage money. So she gives them $6 a week, and then she's got like $1 per month in rent, $1 for other bills, groceries. So it wasn't like a lot. What do you think about implementing something like that for the education piece?
Yeah, I think it's good. Like it's, and everything has to be age appropriate, right? Like as an example, I recorded a podcast episode yesterday on This Is Money, And there was a question there from this chick, brother. She was writing on behalf of the brother. It's like, my brother wanted me to ask this. He's 28 years old, still living at home, rent free, works full time, got 38 grand in debt for two cars. He's booked a holiday to Scotland, with zip money, 5 grand for flights. He's got no real savings. You know, he's good with money though. I'm like, no, he's not. He's actually not. He's been living a false economy, and that's the problem. You've got to make sure if you've got young adults living at your house, that if you do even go, look, we're taking 10% of your income for rent. Now, if you want to put that away and give it to them when they move out, knock yourself out. But we need to not live in a false economy. So this guy's 28 years old. It could be for the last 8 years, he's lived a false economy. He can't move out tomorrow and rent because he's living a false economy. He thinks because I can afford X amount per week, I can afford the car. But it's just so crazy. So I think any type of things that could expose kids to the real world in a safe, age-appropriate way could help. One of the other things that you could do with your kids as well is sit down and show them the household expenses and budget. Even remove all the income because that doesn't matter. It's like, hey, kids, you know how $50 is a lot of money? Yeah. Okay, every single week, we've got to pay $800 on the mortgage. What we leave each day, we go and earn money, we come back. We've got to pay $800 on the mortgage. You saw tonight when we were at the grocery store, it costs $300. This is why we're anal when you leave the heater on and all this crap. I mean, so I think it's just an education piece, not scaring them, just like, hey, real world, this is how it works. And the more prepared you are now, the better you'll be.
Yeah,
But
and
also, I don't know.
no, yeah, don't discount what you're saying. Like, I know you get serious and then you kind of go like, no, I'm gonna lay off a bit. But the spending plan is actually something I've brought up in my client meetings the last 2 weeks. Not for my clients, because they're our clients and they're sorted. But they have a common thing that they tell me that they're not sure how their kids are actually going to go, because they felt like they worked really hard for their money, they put away money, they prioritized, they did all of that, and they've built wealth, but they're not sure if their kids are on that same line. So what I did was that I showed them the side, I showed them the spending plan, I also told them how I use that at home, and then they felt really grateful, because they're like, oh yeah, like we think our kids should be doing better with money, but I think they lack the how of how to do that. Or also, you don't want it to be like nagging or confrontational, because the kids won't want to receive the message. So for our listeners that are not aware of the Glen James spending plan that's available on the website, if you go under courses, I think it's a great way to maybe start that conversation of letting someone else speak to them. So I know as a parent, it doesn't sound like I'm just delivering another nagging exercise at home.
Well, and that's it. Like, if you've got to tell your kid to freaking clean your room up or manage your money well, what's more urgent? Freaking clean your room and let Glenn tell you how to manage your money.
Yes, and it has. I've said it before, but it has actually gotten my 13-year-old to complain less about my nagging, because I do
Awesome.
nag about everything. So for parents, that's one way with the spending plan. So again, because we're discussing the resources, and Glenn, you're attached to so many resources, we've kind of moved away from that episode, which is actually two episodes, because it's a follow-up with questions that came through on your community group. So that's 631B and 631C. And then the spending plan is actually on the website. Like I said, I have shared this with my clients, and they actually really like the idea. They were really happy to know that there was a resource out there. And now if we move on to the book as well, right? Because
The
there is,
book.
yeah, the book. You're getting, you're
Book.
caught up on the Is that the Scottish or the Canadian way that you
I don't know.
are? Something
Me
in
being
between.
an idiot.
Yeah, we're laying off Dutch people in today's episode, aren't we? So we're...
Yeah, Dawn was on my podcast a few weeks ago and she was laying into every Dutch person in the world.
Disclaimer, I'm married to one, so
Yes.
I can say no. Can I say it? I don't know. Anyway, so in Sort Your Money Out, you have touched on a number of topics which are fantastic about how you get to the point to actually invest, where you prioritize your money between debt. You said you've got your life debt, and you've got your debt that needs to go first. You talk about snowballing, which may not be applicable for younger children as yet, but probably our listeners who have teenagers who are going into this. But you also mentioned buy now, pay later. Now that's a hot topic. All right. So if I could just branch into two things, hacks and buy now, pay later. You've got views on each. Could you please share them?
Yeah, so my view on hex or help debt is basically don't pay it off if you don't need, like, if you don't have the money, we'll obviously forget about it. The way it kind of works is each year it's just indexed, so it will be cheaper debt to hold. Another thing as well, like, if you've got goals in your life to save for a home or you want to save an emergency fund, or you're living on the line and you're starting your career and you've got to pay rent. Well, it's a pretty easy discussion. Like, do I pay down extra on my HECS or help debt? Or do I pay rent this week? Do I put this money towards my here and now financial goal of having an emergency fund? The HECS and help debt thing, it's also interesting if you do have a family, HECS and help debt actually dies with you. And just yesterday, Dawn, I was sitting down, friends of mine, he's 30 years old. He actually died at the end of last year from brain cancer. And yeah,
Sorry.
really, single child, like a 1-year-old kid. I sat down this week with his widow and we went through her budget. I just ran her through the Glenn James spending plan. It was weird. Sat down for 2 hours, did one-on-one budget coaching. I was like, wow, I'm back in the game. And then I said to her, do you have any debt? And apart from the mortgage, she goes, oh no. He said, oh, he's got HECS and help debt that we need to take care of. And I said, no, you don't. That debt is gone. And she didn't know that. So you may not know that if you died prematurely, the debt dies with you. Now, the advantage of not paying extra down onto that HECS or help debt is if you were a family unit, and you had a spare $10,000 and you had a $50,000 HECS or help debt. That $10,000 is probably better off on your mortgage because if you did pay the HECS or help debt down by $10,000 and died the next day, that $10,000 is gone and the estate and your family misses out on it. Now, I don't jump up and down with people paying off the HECS and help debt because there are circumstances you might want to clear it up for basic housekeeping. A friend of mine at the end of last year had 25 grand left, received an inheritance from her grandma. She was had a first home, she had good cash savings, had started to invest, and she's like, I feel like I want to clean this part of my life up. Run through all the scenarios, awesome, done. You might have a smaller amount of HECS or help debt left. And you might have 5 grand left, right? And you go for a mortgage. Now, it's important to note when you go for a mortgage or a loan, the banks and lenders, they don't look at the amount of the HECS or help debt. They look at the repayment thresholds. So whether you had $200,000 of HECS or help debt or $5,000, the bank is going to take your repayment of that debt into account. So there are cases where if you go and see a mortgage broker and you've got 25 grand of savings here, you've got 5 grand of HECS or help debt, they say if the HECS or help debt goes, you can borrow an extra 200 grand. So housekeeping, clean it up. So I don't think we should run to clear the HECS or help debt. If you've had HECS or help debt for a number of years, sure, last year it indexed 7%. That's a lot. But remember, the last 10 years, you've had a free kick. The year before was 0.1%. So, yeah, it's just understanding and learning. The buy now, pay later thing leans into it's effectively debt, and it can lead you into living a false economy. Actually, goes back to I can afford $25 per week for the next 4 weeks. I don't have $100 right now, but I can cash flow $25 a week for the next 4 weeks. You are still spending more than what you earn, and you are living a false economy. And I used to say you could game the system all you like, but one day you'll miss a payment, you'll get charged repayment fees. One day, it's like the same with credit cards. Oh, I pay everything on my credit card to get the points. I'm so sophisticated. Oh my gosh, I'm just a financial success. I've never paid interest. One day, you'll slip up. There was the old Vegas illusionists, magicians. I think Siegfried and Roy. If you're old out there like me, you've heard of Siegfried and Roy. And they had the tiger, the white tiger on the stage. They had tamed the tiger for years. Tigers are meant to attack and maul, but they had tamed the tiger until one day it turned around and mauled them. And that's the same thing when you're dicking around, can I say that? Whatever. You're messing around with consumer debt, whether it is credit cards or whether it is buy now, pay later. One day you'll slip up. One day you'll get into a bind. One day you'll spend more than what you earn. And you've just got to pay once, pay cash. There's this new thing called save up and buy it. It's revolutionary. You set up an account and you put your own money in there each week, right? And when you've got that amount, it's so wild. You then go into the shop and you just pay once and you own it. It's revolutionary. We should talk about this more. I can't believe there hasn't been press on this. Save up, then buy it.
See,
Wild.
this is why if you're not on the podcast or the book, it's that tone that I find like it's going to help with the parenting, right? So okay, if we think about the conversations that's going to happen today at the dinner table, because one of the parents, grandparents, uncle or aunts have listened to this episode, and they want to have a chat about buy now, pay later, because I have not actually spoken to my kids about buy now, pay later because it doesn't even form part of our life. Like for me, it doesn't form part of my life. I've not thought to have a conversation about it. But is it like young people make up about 30% of the buy now, pay later usage? And they see it as a way to manage money, which is very, very worrying for me. When I saw the research coming out on that, I was like, no, this is not wrong. They don't see it as debt. How would you, in the Glenn James manner, and you've made it clear that not a parent yet, but you're a parent to the people, Glenn. How would you?
My listeners call me daddy and it's creepy.
Yeah, that's right. So what, how could we approach this buy now, pay later conversation
Okay,
with
so
kids?
what I would likely do is when you're at the shops next, you're walking down Westfield or whatever. Do they have Westfields in Perth?
Yes, they do.
Have they got the internet there yet? Yeah? Okay, cool. So you're walking the shopping center, you walk past the shop. So we're walking past JB Hi-Fi. And on the window you see Afterpay. Maybe what you could do, and again, I've no idea what I'm saying, I just thought about this 20 seconds ago, is show the kids, see this logo. And if they've got a phone and all that, kids, I want you to take a photo of this. Because when we get home, I'm going to show you something. And then get home, get a pen and paper out. Okay. There is these things where you can get someone else to pay for something. Or maybe reframe it like, do you think it's weird if I walked in and picked up that new, I don't know, laptop or what do kids buy from JB Hi-Fi? Some headphones or
You know, power banks. That's why my
power
son looks
banks,
at
power
power
banks.
banks. Yeah.
Okay. Do you think it's weird if we walked into JB Hi-Fi and grabbed a power bank without giving them the full amount of money for it? Oh yeah, that seems weird. Well, There is this service that's designed to effectively trap people, where you can walk in and grab that power bank, and another company will pay it for you, and then you've got to pay them back. Like, that seems so complicated. Like, wouldn't it be just easier just to go, here, JB Hi-Fi, here's $70 for the power bank, and you take it and you get on with your life? I mean, that could be a, I don't know. I'm just kind of cycling on this right now,
No,
but more just talking about the logic. Kids aren't dumb. Hey, kids, is it illogical that what's better? I pay this power bank for $70, or I cannot pay it now, but in 2 days' time, give them $75. Oh, why would we do that? Well, you can actually get the bank to buy that for you and you pay them interest. So it makes no sense to get it now and pay $75 in a week. Wouldn't it be better to just even wait a week and pay $70? So I'm just thinking that the basic logic of it. One thing you mentioned, which it's like one of those hold my beer moments, Dawn. Hold my beer. When we've had Afterpay approach me, it's like every time they get a new PR agency or a new marketing person, they email me wanting to advertise on the podcast. And I'm like, they're like, oh, we want to talk about how Afterpay is, it's just a really good budgeting tool. Like it's got an app and you budget and it's just helping young Australians manage money. That's what Afterpay is. We're just helping Australians manage money. Okay, that's cute. I'm glad you do that. But also, let's talk about a schema that everyone understands. When I'm trying to lose weight, I can get shakes and have a shake and drink that. And over the next couple of weeks, the weight, it falls off me. The moment I stop those bloody shakes, the weight comes back. Same with the Ozempic and all this, stuff. You jab yourself every day. It's a hunger suppressant. Weight falls off. There's a lot of stats where if you stop the Ozempic, the weight flings back. What you're doing there with your health is you're trying to outsource the solution to a third party to get a quick fix. And trust me, I've tried. I overdosed on Ozempic and I spewed my guts up. That's another story for another day, kids. I was being lazy. I accidentally overdosed on the first dose. With our money, don't outsource your money management to an app, particularly one that is designed to lend you money, then you trip up, and then you have to pay overdue fees. There's another, and I'll say it now, I don't actually care. There's this other app called WeMoney. You may have heard of it. They are promoting as a money management tool. And get this, so amazing. There is no cost to use this tool. You feed your bank accounts into it. You see all the categories. On their website, they're basically trying to sell debt consolidation and car loans. That's how they make their money. They've wanted to advertise on my podcast. I'm like, how do you guys make money? Oh, it's a free service. No, you harvest people's bank accounts to see they've got debt and then sell them debt. You need to focus on cleaning up your act and managing your money and learning the behaviors and not trying to outsource this crap to a third party because it doesn't work. Stop drinking the shakes, money comes back. People, when they consolidate debt, they think they've done something amazing. They think, I'm so sophisticated. I had a car loan, I had a personal loan, my Afterpay. The bank, that was so amazing. They took those three loans and put it into one loan for me with a lower monthly repayment. Thank you, bank. Here's a cross and some holy water. Bless you. No, they've likely pushed out the repayment term. You think you've done something, but you've just moved the debt. You haven't worked on your own habits and behaviors. You've got me in a mood today, Dawn.
Oh, sorry, Ben. Just all I mentioned was buy now, pay later, and that took a bit of a turn spiral. But
We're
if
here now.
we're here now, okay, I that passion that Glenn has just expressed and has found a way into our ears and our hearts is actually a concern that I, when I read the research paper that was released in 2023 regarding on buy now, pay later and infecting young people, and actually more so even women. I don't really know about the stats around women, and I know that how there is a gender gap there in various areas. Now there's buy now, pay later, which is utilizing social media trends for people to try and catch up and be cool. I don't know if you can use the word cool. Using the word cool probably is not cool, but you know, doing that. And when I saw that they think that it's a money management tool and it's not debt, I was like, what is happening? I feel like, have I been sleeping and not realized that this huge thing is happening in the background? But I think for our parents who are listening to this podcast, I think it's worth a discussion with your kids because it could be something that they just do behind your back. And because it's not part of our world, doesn't mean it's not going to be part of their world. So I think, you know, sensing Glenn's passion through all of that, I think I am going to have to put that on the agenda of topics of conversation with my children is buy now, pay later.
Yeah, because it's funny you said the gender thing. Like, I don't know any guys that have used it ever. I only know women. And that's not to say guys don't use it, but just in my sphere of friendship and circles. It was so funny. It does creep up on you. I remember back in, when did it come out, Afterpay? Like 2017 or 18 or something? My cousin, my second cousin, whatever you call it, my cousin's kid, she came into my financial planning office in like 2017 or 18. And I'm like, oh, have you got, like, she wanted money help. And this is part of the reasons why I did the Glenn James spending plan. I'm like, just watch my videos, fill out the spreadsheet, you'll be all good. Like, it will, I'll actually teach you how to manage your money. Wild. I'm like, do you have any debt? She said, no, I don't. Oh, I've got Afterpay. I'm like, what the friggin' hell's Afterpay? Like, it just hit the scene, right?
Yes, it hit the scene. And for me, I honestly have not paid much attention to it, but now it's becoming, you know, when you talk about the credit card levels, and even though that's growing, it's kind of a stagnating growth because they think buy now, pay later is coming. You know, we used to talk about credit cards a lot, but this the new credit card that people are not even aware is like a credit card, because
And
it's, yeah.
it's funny, like, if you want to be noble and wholesome and say, I want to support local businesses and all that, don't ever use Afterpay in their business because they pay up to like 5% in fees. And the Afterpay agreements, like, you go to the cafe tomorrow, right? And you're like, oh, I'll have a large coffee. They're like, sweet, it's $6 plus there's 6 cents. Merchant fee.
The surcharge, yeah.
Yeah. The retail agreement with Afterpay, the retail has to absorb that. So it's even worse for small businesses. And it's such, I was talking to a friend who owns a chemist. I walked in the other day and she's got a sign there and it says Afterpay not available. I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah.
What's happening? He goes, it's too expensive for us. We can't do it. But the reason that she got it 5 years ago was the demand of people wanting to buy stuff and use Afterpay. So we are starting to see it come back around. And I would encourage any small business owners, make a stand. I know you want money. I know you want to make a sale, but I don't know. Just try and see if you can wean off your business from using these services. And I think, is it APRA, the ATO, or Treasury, someone, one of the government departments are reviewing these rates because they're just, it's pretty much the Wild West with the merchant costs that, and that's a lot of the way that Afterpay make the money, right? It's only a small percentage of the money that they make from the overdue late fees and all that. And this isn't a discussion about, oh, there's no fees if I don't pay it off. There's only like $5 or whatever. It's not about that. Learn to manage your money, have less crap in your life. Have less of your personal information out there on other apps. So if they get hacked, you, like, I don't know, it's wild.
No, it is wild. It is wild. So, it is definitely an important topic, Glenn. We both agree on that. So that I'm sure our listeners will be going home, rushing home, in fact, to talk about buy now, pay later, because it's we've both agreed is really important. On the last bit, because I know you've got to run. You're a busy man. You're busy just changing the lives of people with your
I'm
straight
just
money
out
conversations.
there
You're just out
annoying
there.
people when they bring up Afterpay.
Yeah, that's right. That's
But
what
also,
Glenn's gonna
if you
do.
like, this is the whole thing. If you use it and you like it, whatever, I don't care. You do you. But if you ask me what I think about it, you've just heard.
You just heard. Rounding us off before you go, I want to ask you about loot, right? Because we hear about the fire movement and the fighter movement, and then I've read about your loot movement. So it's a handy way to, in the book, I'd just like to say that Glenn talks about the linear method of what we call traditional retirement. And then you outline what this bit of it's a graph in there. It's where you've outlined, it looks a bit more of a fun journey if you're following the loot method. So loot is life on your own terms. Is that sort of what it stands for? Why is it important to explain a concept of loot to kids, but potentially now?
Yeah, I think gone, it's categorically gone the days where you work for Telstra or Telecom for the rest of your life. The gone are the days where you're probably a career nurse or a career butcher, baker, candlestick maker. Like we change, right? It's just the nature of life and work, gig economy, hybrid work arrangements. So what I would encourage young people to do, if they're doing their HSC, there's a lot of pressure to get a good ATAR. Is it the same in Perth or Western Australia?
Yes,
Is it
the same. Like we're not
Oh,
there
no, but like,
different.
don't that, no, Dawn. Don't they have some state-based, like in Victoria, it's the VCAT or I don't know, whatever.
I don't. Okay,
Or,
look, I'm also like I'm from Singapore. I must say, I for everything seems new to me here. What's going
that's
on with the
right.
kids? Yeah.
So all I would say is so many people that I've talked to finish high school. I don't know what to do, but I'm good and I got a good grade. I'll go do engineering. I'll go and do business. I'll go and do physio. I'll go do OT. And then they rock up at age 24, 25 going, this sucks. Wish I didn't do that. I'm passionate about this or that. So if you don't actually know what you want to do, I reckon it's okay to go and live a bit and just work. If you're consciously dialed in, go and get a job, trade, whatever. If you don't know or do something, if you are interested in uni that you don't quite know, maybe like a business degree, just so you've got some actual commercial acumen. I don't know, it could be handy. So it's around this whole life is different. It's okay if you wake up one day and you don't like what you're doing. But how do we prevent? So I said to a friend the other day, she just left school year 11. She's studying dietitian or something like that at a private thing. She's like, I just wasn't interested in school. I'm like, awesome. I left school after year 11 at 16 because it just wasn't for me. It's really important if you know you want to be a doctor, if you know you want to be a vet, if you know you want to be an optometrist, like in your blood and you're smart, you need that formal education, you need to get started. But if you don't know what you want to do, do something that you're passionate about and even work part-time casually on the side, as long as you've got a plan. Like don't just go, oh, I don't like school and sit at home all day or finish year 12 and mooch around. No, go and do something, get educated, do something that you're interested in at least. Rather than hating something and doing it that you're not interested in, because you're going to get probably paid either way. And so, this concept of the fire movement versus loot. Traditionally, it was let's accrue as much money as we can in investing accounts so we can retire early and be financially independent. So, that's financial independence, retire early. Awesome. There's a few variants now, and it's almost just whatever. But when it first came out as the movement, there was this culture of grind away, punch savings. Then, once I retire from the workforce, then I do what I'm passionate about. Then I can go and start my business. I'm like, Stuff that. Life's too short. I'm cutting that 20 years out and I'm just going to do what I enjoy now. Because when you retire, you're still going to want to do something. I tell people I retired from the workforce at age 25 when I started my own business. I haven't worked for anyone since. I just happen to do what I like. I just liked helping people. I've not had Mondayitis since 2010. I
That's amazing.
rarely set my alarm. Like, that's my definition of success. Do what I
Yes.
want, wake up when I want. It's nothing to do with have a portfolio of $1 million. So why bust your guts and scrimp and save and amass as much money as possible for 10 or 15 years and be pseudo miserable? Like, why don't you chill out and do something you're passionate about? Imagine if you could be passionate about something and also good at something. The money will take care of itself. And I can say that with confidence because since 2010, I've been good at what I do, passionate about it, and I've printed money. And it wasn't about when I left my business in the city, actually. I want you to tell Michelle that I need to interview her, okay? Michelle works with Dawn. Michelle was responsible for this mess right here. She was the first one who hired me in financial services. Now, when I left that firm that she was working at, one of the directors said when I left, he said two things: don't chase the dollars, look after people. Not once have I ever chased the dollars. We get sponsorship people come in all the time. Oh, hey, can we sponsor the podcast? You know, and I can charge up to $20,000 per podcast episode. Like, I can do that, and I have. I turn away a lot of those things because it's not about the money. It's like, no, if I think your brand's rubbish, I don't want all, I don't want your money to promote it. So, all that to say, find what you're good at. If you're not passionate about it, quote unquote, but you enjoy it, double down on that. In fact, you need to read the book Sort Your Career Out, Dawn, because I reckon you'd really like it because that book that we wrote, it's the actual prequel to Sort Your Money Out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the premise of Sort Your Career Out was the best, like before you worry about investing, before you worry about buying a house and all that. The best investment and the best asset that you've got is standing in your mirror. So you need to get your career sorted. And the whole first chapter talks about values. Because remember, I said, what if you did what you're good at and what you're passionate about? And that could be passion slash value slash interested in. You've got to go back to that bedrock. And it's like, oh, anyone do I hate work? I'm a people person. I'm in a cubicle all day. Or, anyone who hate work, I'm a receptionist and I have to talk to people all day and I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
So I think it is that getting your values nailed. Then we talk about risk, we talk about positioning your career and your job. Because if you nail that career piece, the money will take care of itself. Sure, there are going to be bad days, but you're not going to hate life.
And that is a very important conversation to have, but I feel as well, and I'm going to put it on my list to get sort your career out. But just going through sort your money out, and even that chapter that you said your career matters more than you think. It's
Did I write that
similar.
in that chapter?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, see, you had it in there. And we interviewed Lacey Philippich from Money School, and she has a chapter on that as well about making sure that you enjoy what really having those conversations. And I don't know how much of that happens at home because we're so caught up in the clean up your dishes. You haven't picked up your clothes. You're kind of like shouting about the normal stuff, but rather this stuff that could change lives. So I would encourage that again with reading the book. I think your particular book, it's not something that the parents have to necessarily read themselves and translate to the kids. I think if your kids are maybe like 13 and older, 12 and older, I think they can pick it up and actually read those concepts. So Glenn has a lot of diagrams in there as well. Like he talks about the financial house, talks, like it's very. It's an easy read to get your way forward in thinking. And like Glenn has said as well, that when you step into one podcast or you step into the book, there are plenty of resources for you to continue your journey within the This Is Money world, the universe, like almost like Marvel and the Marvel and DC universe. You've got all the different origin stories of the different things that are happening. So thank you, Glenn, for going through that. On if I could, you have your own podcast, so I don't have to have you on every time. But Michelle is actually going to be our resident book reviewer. When we can't get an author in for a book, she's going
Awesome.
to do the review. So maybe I
Awesome.
might just get her to review Sort Your Career Out so we can discuss.
I wrote that with Shell, co-author who hosts our work podcast. You can interview Shell.
Michelle, okay, perfect. So we get Shell on, but Michelle has definitely thinking, she's not just thinking, she will be on your podcast. She just wants to have a few trial runs on my
Yeah,
smaller
awesome.
podcast.
Well, that's it. Like, just let her know. Like, once she's ready, she can come on my podcast. We can talk about her money story and you can promote your podcast on it as well.
Oh, thank you. See, everyone, Glenn is a very generous man. His community is very large. He hasn't talked about how huge his impact is, but again, you can see from how he talks is same language is in the books and the podcast as well. I found just really, really just good to listen to. But that kids one, oh my gosh, it's just award-winning. You just need to listen to it. And then if you've got further questions, Glenn has a community group that happens over there, but also you can go to the Start Well podcast. On a note to leave before we go, if you like that episode, please support Glenn's podcast by leaving a review and rating the podcast episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please review and rate that as well. Thank you so much, Glenn James.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Dawn.
In the spirit of reconciliation, I acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connection to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Start Well and investing in the financial empowerment of young people. Please refer to the show notes for resources and links discussed in this episode. Subscribe now to get notified of the latest episodes as they drop weekly. And visit us on the Wealth Designers Start Well page for further resources to continue your knowledge journey.